Well, welcome to another edition of the Health First Show. I'm your host, Dave Fuller, and we're going to be talking to Dreanna Burton about her book, Plant-Powered Families, in the first half of the show. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking with Bill Aaron. He's a cancer survivor, and we're going to be talking about his book that where he went around and talked to 120 cancer survivors. But before we do that, here's Reg with the health news.
According to new U.S. government data, antibiotic resistance in foodborne germs remains a public health threat despite attempts to combat the problem. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports antibiotic-resistant infections from foodborne germs still cause about 440,000 illnesses in the United States each year. Testing in 2013 revealed multidrug resistance in salmonella infections remains steady, accounting for 10% of foodborne illnesses, but antibiotic resistance in some types of salmonella is increasing. The agency says in one strain, the rate of drug resistance more than doubled in 2 years. Salmonella infection causes diarrhea, fever, and abdominal cramps. Exercise reduces pregnant women's risk of developing gestational diabetes and also helps control weight gain, a new review shows. In the report, published recently in the BJOG, an international journal of obstetrics and gynecology, Spanish researchers analyzed 13 studies, including a total of more than 2,800 pregnant women who normally did little or no exercise. The studies looked at what happened when the women participated in exercise programs. The study found women who exercised reduced their risk of pregnancy-related or gestational diabetes by more than 30%. For women who exercised throughout pregnancy, the risk of gestational diabetes was 36% lower. Another benefit the investigators found from exercise was a slightly lower weight. The findings showed women who exercised during pregnancy were about 2 pounds lighter than women who didn't exercise. According to a new study, concentration and attention problems caused by sleep deprivation might be eased by eating less late at night. The researchers included 44 volunteers aged 21 to 50. For 3 days, they were given unlimited access to food and drink during the day, but they were only allowed to sleep 4 hours a night. On the fourth night, about half of the participants continued to have unlimited access to food and drink. The other half were restricted to water from 10 p.m. until they went to sleep at 4 a.m. At 2 a.m. on each of the four nights, the participants underwent tests to measure their memory, thinking skills, sleepiness, stress level, and mood. The findings showed on the fourth night of sleep restriction, those who fasted had better reaction times and fewer attention lapses than those who ate. And finally, living close to a high number of fracked natural gas wells may be linked to an increased risk of having a lower birth weight baby, according to a new study of Pennsylvania birth rates. In this study, University of Pittsburgh researchers analyzed the birth records of more than 15,400 babies born in Pennsylvania's Washington, Westmoreland, and Butler counties between 2007 and 2010. Women who lived close to a high number of natural gas fracking sites were 34% more likely to have babies who were small for gestational age than mothers who did not live close to a large number of such wells. The researchers say the study, published online June 3rd in the journal PLOS ONE, does not prove that living close to a high concentration of natural gas fracking sites caused low birth weights, but does show the need for further investigation.
Thanks for that, Rich. Our first guest, Dreanna Burton, has written a number of books, including our latest, Plant-Powered Families. Dreanna, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Tell us a little bit about this book and, you know, why you wrote it.
Sure. Well, I've written, this is my fifth printed cookbook, and over the years, with each book, I sort of had another child, and we have three daughters now. And they became, you know, as they were growing, I sort of felt like I was learning things about feeding them and their developmental stages and food and school and all of the things that come into, you know, a healthy diet with kids and moving through the school system. And I just felt that they were at ages now where I had learned a lot as a mother and also where I felt the vegan community has grown a lot and plant-based eating has really grown, but there wasn't a lot out there for families and for helping people see the insides of sort of like the inside workings of bringing daily meals together or packing lunches and that kind of thing. So I really wanted to bring that out to the community and to help people even just to eat healthier week to week, even if they don't want to go fully plant-based, but to incorporate more healthy meals that are plant-based into their diets.
Yeah, there seems, you know, it's an excellent book. I've tons of
Thank
recipes
you.
In there. And the second thing I notice is that there seems to be a trend, or maybe you can clarify if this is true, but there seems to be a trend towards eating less meat in North America. Is that true?
Definitely. There's information coming out just about every week or every month now about how people really are eating less meat and also consuming less dairy. And I think there's a few things that have contributed to that. I think partly people are becoming more aware of the environmental consequences of meat eating and also the health consequences. Documentaries like Forks Over Knives have really had a big impact. And then there's been a lot of celebrity attention to what goes on in animal agriculture and how horrific those situations are, and that 99% of the meat we eat is factory farmed. So most of what people are consuming really is coming from factory farmed productions. And I think all of that attention combined has really helped people see food in a different way and realize that we sort of need to come back to more natural foods and also eat less processed foods, because we've really had, you know, a couple of decades of eating a lot of heavily processed foods and meats and dairy products and just also convenience foods and sweets and all of those things that people are eating very frequently to kind of keep up the pace of life we have. So we sort of have to return to more natural, wholesome foods and find ways to get back into the kitchen and make those happen easily for our families or even just for ourselves when we're busy as individuals.
Trina, remind us about what some of the environmental impacts are of consuming, a lot of meat.
Right. Well, meat consumption is the number one contributor to greenhouse gases. And we all look at, you know, when Earth Day comes around every year, or we have these sort of movements to become a little bit more conscious of doing our part to help the environment, there's always a focus on things like recycling and reusing and, how to use less water. But really, the single most effective thing you can do to conserve water and to make an environmental difference is to eat less meat and dairy, because they're both extremely detrimental to our environment. And if you do any kind of Google search about meat consumption in the environment, also with dairy, you'll come up with all kinds of information and well-researched documents to support that effort. And it's not as hard as people think. I find if people make a few strides week to week, like maybe make a meal that's meatless, go with the meatless Monday trend. It's very popular. Again, if you Google that, you'll find a lot of information. And then just take it by step. If you're feeling overwhelmed and a few days a week, you start to feel better. You notice that meal gave you a little more energy. You didn't feel heavy. And it's really quite encouraging to help you make another meatless meal or one that's completely plant-based.
Now, tell us a little bit about your background and how you became a vegan, because you weren't born that way.
No.
I mean,
no.
you tell us about your family and how you kind of grew.
Sure, Dave. Not at all. I grew up in Newfoundland. I'm living in BC, but I grew up in Newfoundland, and we were a very traditional family, eating quite a lot of meat-based meals, and we also ate a lot of very processed meats like Vienna sausages and bologna and those foods of the day. My mom had six children, so we ate, she did her best to make home-cooked meals, and she did, but we certainly didn't eat a lot of fresh foods. There wasn't a whole great deal of fresh foods growing up in St. John's at that time either. And so I ate a lot of meat and vegetables were usually boiled and not very appetizing to me. And I ate a lot of junk food, too. My grandfather had a little corner store, so I used to run off and get treats at the corner store all the time. But in my late teens, I started to learn a little bit more about diet and its connection to health. And in my 20s in university, I was feeling pretty awful, actually. I was like about 23, and my digestion felt very slow, and I felt really uncomfortable after eating. I used to really love dairy, and I consumed quite a bit of it, but I ate meat as well. I just felt, I had wondered, I thought, I'm 23, and I think I'm feeling maybe 20 years older than I should, and I thought, what am I going to feel like when I am 20 years older? And I started to learn about dairy and meat consumption and how it is connected to our health. I was having a lot of stiffness in my joints. I even had gout in my 20s. And I removed, slowly, I just kind of gradually learned and took meat out of the equation first and later dairy. And I read some books by John Robbins and just kind of put the pieces together over time. There wasn't as much information out there as there is now, but there was enough to really make me feel like it was important to try, and it resonated with me quite deeply. I felt much better, and taking the dairy and meat out was made a significant difference in how I felt. And I feel now like I have more energy at 44 than I did, almost 44 than I did when I was 24. So that was where I started my diet. And then my father-in-law had a heart attack shortly after. And oddly, his cardiologist was vegetarian and really encouraged him to look into eating plant-based, which was quite a surprise, again, that many years ago and where we were living. But they came to us and asked for help, and that's actually what sort of inspired me to start writing cookbooks, because there wasn't very much on the market at the time.
You know, you brought a good point in. It's about changing lifestyle, and, you know, people that are in their 40s that, you know, perhaps their lifestyle isn't great. You know, what happens if they're in their 40s and 50s and they want to make these changes? What will they notice?
I think initially there's really an energetic change. I really feel like the people that I connect with online through social media and my blog, they tend to report that the very initial experience is to have more energy. And that makes a lot of sense, because plant foods digest much more efficiently. And a lot of energy actually goes into our digestion. It requires a lot of energy from our body. And it's why when we're very sick, we don't have much of an appetite, because our body's really working to fight illnesses. And so if we're eating a lot of heavy, dense, processed foods, it does require a lot of energy from our body. And so we feel very sluggish. We feel uninspired and just, you know, tired in general. And when we're eating foods that are more natural in their state, and they fuel us, not just about eating, but they really do fuel us. And it doesn't mean that our food doesn't have to be exciting or interesting, because it can be. It's fabulous. There's so much to enjoy. But it really gives us an energy boost. So initially, it's hard. Like, the first few days may be quite hard, because you're releasing a lot of foods. And I always say you're releasing foods and really embracing new foods. And so that first few days can be a challenge, because you've got to break sort of those patterns of reaching for the favorites that you've reached for, like cheese, which is very, very addictive. And once you have it out of your diet for a few weeks, you really don't look back. And so that's really, I think, the first thing is their energy. And I think over time, people start to notice that some health conditions that they were experiencing can improve, or even they can reverse some health conditions like diabetes. People have been known, it's been scientifically shown that you can treat and reverse type 2 diabetes on a plant-based diet, and people with heart conditions have improvements. And there's just a whole host of things. And general immunity, I think, too, feeling better. I mean, it's not like we never get colds, but I find, at least in my family, we get colds and things through the season like other people, but we don't tend to get terribly run down with them, with infections and prolonged illnesses. So that's something I've noticed in our family as well.
We're talking with Drina Burton. She has written a book called Plant Powered Families. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be getting into some of the recipes that you might be able to use in your families.